Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voices radio show, where Reasonable Voices get to speak their piece. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. And my guest today is Andrea Miller, who was the Democratic nominee in the 2008 race for the House of Representatives to represent the Virginia 4th District. Currently is the Executive Director of People Demanding Action. Now, People Demanding Action is a mass-based political movement and network rebuilding a populist coalition to protect and preserve the dreams of our children and the coming generations. The mission of PeopleDemandingAction.org is to help format and evolve a grassroots movement to rebuild American democracy, freedom, peace, and justice. Andrea Miller, that's quite a mission.
Oh, Marcello, thank you so much for having me as a guest. I am delighted, absolutely delighted.
You know, I know you're about all over the country politically. You've worked very much with as a co-director of the Progressive Democrats of America. But let's talk about, it's Monday, June 15th, we're recording the show, and you are in Washington, D.C. at the Smithsonian Institute. And what is going on there? Why are you there?
Well, in the event that you hear little birdies chirping, it is because I am outside at the Smithsonian. Very shortly, we're going to have a rally and a little march where we are basically telling the board of directors at the Smithsonian to kick David Koch off their board. The board of directors is actually meeting today, and their meeting place is literally right around the corner from where we are holding our rally. Now, it is bad enough that they have David Koch on their board, but what really, really makes this intolerable is David Koch has put up an exhibit in the Museum of Natural History that basically is a junk science exhibit. He has sponsored an exhibit that says global warming is basically good for you. People are going to get leaner. They're going to get more sweat glands. Right. I always have to jump right in with that because people go, what? Global warming is what? Yes. They're saying as the earth gets hotter, well, you know, there's a benefit. We're going to get leaner. We're going to develop more sweat glands. I guess we ignore that. Major cities all across the world will permanently be underwater. People are going to die. Our food supply is going to be threatened. But after all, we will be leaner and with more sweat glands.
Well, I guess that's Koch Brothers for you. That's convenient science of Koch. I don't even know how to begin to respond to that, but I certainly am glad you are there trying to draw attention, because most of us don't know things like that. It takes, we have to do some digging.
Well, hang on, Marcello.
Okay.
If you came to the Smith Smithsonian and you saw this exhibit, which is still up at the Smithsonian, this is a junk science exhibit in a museum, the museum of the United States. This is the most prestigious museum of the United States, and they are hosting a junk science exhibit and not putting a big disclaimer on it. This is absolute, utter nonsense. This is a joke. We are pulling your leg. We are lying to you. We're seeing all the other really bad things that are going to happen as the world gets warmer. And we've come up with something ridiculous, and we're telling you it's good for you.
And we're getting away from it because we're making contributions somewhere or buying our way into the board?
They gave the museum $5 million. Ah. And I guess for $5 million or more, you get to lie to millions of people. And you get to put up nonsense and claim it's science.
But in a place, as you say, such as the Smithsonian, that's beyond disturbing.
Yeah, you're right. This is not some out-of-the-way museum in Iowa. This is in Washington, D.C. at the Smithsonian on the National Mall.
Oh, well, I don't know. What should we do? What can we do in addition? You know, we know what you're doing. You're there. You've got a rally. You're making it clear. What should the average American citizen do? Should we write Smithsonian, say, I don't know, we're not going to come there if you are supporting untruths?
I think that may be what it's going to come down to. We had a petition, and now the last time I looked was yesterday, but we had more than 240,000 signatures on that petition. Now, I know there's a number of other organizations hosting their own petitions. Mm-hmm. I mean, People Demanding Action at PDA, we got 2,500 new signatures literally in the past couple of days. Wow. So people, when they hear about this, are absolutely outraged. They really cannot believe what they're reading. Now, what I'll do, Marcello, and again, I'm out here at the Smithsonian.
Yes.
I will send you a link to the petition.
Okay.
Because we're going to leave it open even longer, and what we may do is we may do a couple of deliveries. I know there's going to be one delivery today, and I'm not sure whether they're going to actually let us in and deliver it to any member of the board, or mm-hmm. a member of the board will come out and ceremonially accept our signatures. But again, this is ridiculous.
Yes.
When nonsense can be passed off as real science at the premier museum in the United States, this is really sad. You know, it's one thing for Fox News to say this is science. It's a whole other world when the Smithsonian says it's science.
Exactly. And are you saying you are dropping off a hard copy of the petition at the Smithsonian today? That's part of your action, your rally?
I'm going to be here for the petition delivery. Now, uh-huh. I'm not sure if they're going to drop off hard copies or if they're going to do what so many organizations do now, because it is irresponsible to waste all that paper.
Sure.
Because we know all they're going to do is throw it away.
Yes.
We are probably going to load them onto a thumb drive and put the thumb drive in one box and deliver the box.
Excellent. So 21st century. Yes, and saving the trees and making your point. Wow.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I look forward to getting that link. I know you are not new to letter drop-offs, petition drop-offs. You've been co-director of PTA doing that on Capitol Hill.
Yep.
So I'm only going to change the subject, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm talking to Andrea Miller, who is involved in so many wonderful causes, all for all of the people, all of the time. But I'd like something else that is perhaps just as startling. This is a two-part question, Andrea. Why do you think all of us should be interested in the judicial history of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman versus the infamous Karl Rove? And what's the significance of making of the documentary Killing Atticus Finch? How is that all coming about now? Who's involved? And tell us about it.
Well, the reason that literally every American should be aware and very concerned about the Don Siegelman case is that Don Siegelman did absolutely nothing wrong. He committed no crime. However, he is in prison. Don Siegelman's crime was unfortunately being a very popular Democratic governor in a state that the Republicans wanted to turn red. And they realized that as long as Don Siegelman was a free man, he was going to keep getting elected to something. So down in what we like to think of as Banana Republic, you would potentially see a literal political assassination. In Don Siegelman's case, we saw a political character assassination, meaning we had a prosecutor who was married to the campaign manager of his opponent bring totally false charges. The sitting judge in that case was a judge that basically Don Siegelman had prosecuted as the attorney general for mishandling funds in a pension fund. So now you have a prosecutor that is not impartial. You have a judge with a grudge. So, of course, in this kangaroo court scenario, and did I mention the paid witness where they had a person with a lot of petty charges and they basically said, look, if you testify against Don Siegelman that you saw these things that never happened, then basically we're going to drastically reduce your sentence and let you go.
Oh, my God.
I mean, wow. All right, then this, what this basically means to the average person is if you have an unpopular viewpoint or it's unpopular with people in power and you won't go away, they can come up with creative ways to put you away. This also happened to Reverend Edward Pinckney up in Benton Harbor, who went against the whirlpool.
Ah, yes, yes. I remember that one.
All right, and so let's think about that. Don Siegelman was an attorney. He was an elected official. He was a very smart and, at the time, a very, very rich man. If they can do that to someone like Don Siegelman, what chance do us regular average people stand if we get in the way of the wrong person?
Well, we can make a documentary. Tell us, who's involved with the making of this documentary? And I guess if it gets made and gets laid out there in front of the public, it could have quite an impact on... I mean, we know these things about politics, but you know the power of... Even more still, I think, than the Internet, is the power of the television. You see it on a screen of any size, and Americans tend to believe it. So how will this film... who's involved in making it, when will they make it, and how do you see its impact on American politics?
There's many, many new things in the Don Siegelman case that are currently evolving. Don Siegelman very recently had an appeal hearing. That appeal was denied. So this is a new development. There has been discovered that there was new evidence in the trial that was literally being prevented from being presented. So there's the work that's going on now to bring this to the light.
Mm.
Judge Fuller has resigned in this race, which basically should really make people look at this case where he issued a draconian sentence for what he knew was not a crime. Don Siegelman never took any money. Don Siegelman never received the money. The money went to a 501c3.
Mm.
A gentleman by the name of Steve Wimberly is actually going to be shooting the movie, and I know people know Mimi Kennedy from Mom.
Sure.
Mimi Kennedy is one of the co-producers, and I'm sitting here and the name is in front of me and I am not remembering the other woman that is co-producing, who is an Academy Award producer herself.
Uh-huh.
So the film now has two amazing co-producers who really want to get this story told. One of the problems is so much of this unfolded in 2000 all the way up through 2002, mm-hmm. and then Governor Siegelman's been appealing. He didn't go to prison until 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So there, as I said, the case is still evolving. There were things that we thought were true, and then through whistleblowers and various other things, we now know these 10, 12 years later, yes, this was true, but we have never been able to bring this evidence forward, not even in the appeal. And interesting point, Governor Siegelman was not even allowed to appear at his appeal in Atlanta. They basically disappeared him for 49 days where he was kept in solitary confinement.
Oh my God, this is like out of the 20s. Chain gang or something.
This is the kind of story that if it were a movie, everybody after seeing the movie would go, oh, that's so fake, that could never happen. So everything is being done to keep this man behind bars,
yes,
and not ever let him out.
And one of the people involved is the Academy Award winner and activist Maria Florio of Earthworks Films.
That's right. And again, I was seeing the email, but when I got to her name, her name was being blocked out. Yes. The story itself is incredible. This man's fight to prove his innocence, his daughter and his son fight to prove their father's innocence. This is such an incredible story of such a good man who all he was trying to do was create a lottery in the state of Alabama to make it possible for poor kids to go to college. And he ends up with a 6.5-year prison sentence.
Well, we're going to take a break. Before we take a break, I'd like you to give us any kind of link. I imagine people are fundraising to make killing Atticus Finch. And then after the break, I want to know how Karl Rove fits in all of this. But do you have a website or a place where fundraising is taking place for killing Atticus Finch, the documentary?
I'm going to give you two sites. You can, of course, always go to freedon.org, and the movie is there. You can also go to gofundme.com/Don Siegelman Film.
Okay, so that's free, F-R-E-E-Don, D-O-N, .org, and that's the easy one. But there's also gofundme.com/Don Siegelman, S-I-E-G-E-L-M-A-N, Film. We're going to take a break now. We'll be right back with Andrea Miller. Don't go away. She's my wonderful political and personal friend, and I finally know how to pronounce her name after 10 years. Andrea Miller, in Washington, D.C., even as we speak, fighting the Koch brothers lying in the Smithsonian Institute about science. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Lisa Cholodenko's credits as writer and director include The Admirable High Art and Laurel Canyon, both examples of fine indie filmmaking with strong female leads. Today's film is more than consistent with her track record. The Kids Are All Right is a polished portrait of a modern family headed up by a same-sex couple, Julianne Moore as Jules and Annette Bening as Nick. This happy, well-adjusted family is suddenly threatened by their teenage children's desire to meet their biological father. The friendly, likable, and delightfully immature Paul, played by Mark Ruffalo. Conservative Nick is not happy with the thought of exposing them to such an unnecessary complication. But the children will not be deterred, so Paul becomes a part of their lives. Nick is horrified at this intrusion into their comfortably boring family, while at the same time, Jules finds herself dangerously attracted to him. The Kids Are All Right is not exactly a shoestring indie, but it is an entertaining and accomplished film populated with masters of their craft who revel in delivering a complex story of humor and heart. The Kids Are All Right, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices radio talk show. My guest today is Andrea Miller, who has run for Congress, who has been co-director of Progressive Democrats of America, who is involved very much in the documentary titled Killing Atticus Finch. And we have her on today for any number of reasons. There are just so many things that Andrea is doing for all of us. She's in Washington, D.C. as we speak at the Smithsonian Institute, just outside, around the corner, ready with a rally to go in and challenge why the Smithsonian Institute would be allowing David Koch to buy his way into and to exhibit false science about climate change. But we're not going to go back to that right now. But we were just finishing up a discussion on this documentary, Killing Atticus Finch, which has some pretty good heavyweights involved, award-winning, Oscar award-winning people producing, etc. But my last question before we move on to something else, Andrea, my last question about the documentary is, where does Karl Rove fit in this, with a judge having been investigated when Don Singelman was the Attorney General? And we mentioned again for those coming late that Don Singelman had been elected as a Democrat, legally elected to a number of offices, in Alabama. He's a former Alabama governor, and he's now in prison on some pretty trumped up charges. But having said trumped up charges, it seems redundant to ask what does Karl Rove have to do with it. But
look at it this way. Karl Rove is the architect and executioner, shall we say, of the Republican Southern strategy of taking all the Southern states, turning them Republican at the governor and state legislature level. Mm-hmm. So he's the one where he provides the campaign managers, his organizations and front groups raise the cash. But he realized with the case of Don Singelman in Alabama, this was really going to be a problem because Don Singelman was popular with both Democrats and Republicans. Mm. He was loved by black people. He was loved by white people because he was a good and fair man. Mm-hmm. And people responded to that. He had been the attorney general, the lieutenant governor. He had been the governor. And even with all this scandal going on election night, when Don Spiegelman went to bed, they called the election for him. Mm. Now, the next morning when he woke up, suddenly an extra 6,000 votes had appeared in one county out of nowhere. Mm. And you know, to this day, they have never recounted those ballots.
Oh, my heavens.
Well, and that would be because the judge said anybody that attempts to recount the ballot will be going to jail.
How often am I speechless?
Here's another thing to keep in mind. Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton were Southern presidents.
Uh-huh.
Don Spiegelman was being considered as a dark house candidate for the 2004 election. Remember, John Kerry really didn't do very well in the South.
Yes.
You know, that old, he was a Yankee kind
yes,
of thing going
yes.
on. Don Spiegelman was Southern. He would have done well in
yes.
the South.
Yes.
And Karl Rove couldn't have that happen. Not only did he have a popular governor, he had a popular governor threatened to go presidential candidate on him.
Well, that, for me anyway, answers the question of what Karl Rove had to do with it. You know, I remember the day that Karl Rove so-called resigned his position in the White House and all the tears and whatever, and GW and his speech, and I'm thinking, if anybody thinks Karl Rove is going off somewhere to vacation, they are so mistaken. He's just been reassigned.
That's right. Was merely going underground
yes.
like a little rat or a weasel.
Yes. And the danger of that, of course, is that it's bad enough having him out in the open, but at least then you can keep an eye on him. But when he went underground, I thought, we just don't know where he is. We've got to ferry him out somehow and keep an eye on him. And this is, I guess, an example of the kind of thing he's been up to. Well, it's just so disturbing, and I can see why the documentary is called Killing Atticus Finch, because it certainly sounds like the former Alabama governor, Don Spiegelman, is that kind of character. I'm going to move on again, I apologize, because there's always so much to talk about with Andrea. I would like to talk about, you know, what have you been up to lately? And that, of course, I'm being facetious, because it is a constant lobbying in the greatest sense of going to the Hill, going to the Smithsonian Institute, and coming to the aid of those who are not always, those both who do not have a voice or don't know they have a voice, but those with a voice who don't use it. But to challenge us all to get involved and introduce us to people demanding action. It's a relatively, I believe, new organization. Is it kind of an offshoot of Progressive Democrats of America? Is it a separate entity of its own? I know its mission is pretty broad and trying to build a coalition of green people. You'll explain that. But tell us about PeopleDemandingAction.org.
All righty. Well, People Demanding Action is really the civic arm of Progressive Democrats of America. A lot of people didn't realize, because they looked at the work that PDA did, Progressive Democrats of America is a political action committee.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that generally most PACs are very heavily involved in electoral politics,
mm-hmm.
and then they do some issue work. PDA did major, major, major issue advocacy.
Yes.
So basically what's happened is Progressive Democrats of America now has the ability to go and do what they were really built to do,
mm-hmm.
which is electoral politics. So they're very involved in the Bernie Sanders for President campaign. As a matter of fact, it was them that talked him into A, running for president, and B, running as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
They are also going to be involved in a number of congressional races. And now that we have People Demanding Action as the civic arm, we are no longer limited to only working on federal issues.
Gotcha.
So we can work on federal issues the way we always have, and then campaigns like the ERA took us into working at state level as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a number of laws in Congress where there's also a state and or a local component as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as a federal political action committee, PDA was really not equipped to go into those spaces, and People Demanding Action is.
All right. Well, thank you. I believe it was the weekend of May 8th and 10th of this year. I attended, I don't know if it was its initial coming together, a conference. Yes.
And yes, inaugural, as it was.
That's what I wanted to say, yes, thank you. Inaugural conference of People Demanding Action. And it's a desire to for justice solidarity conference, as in bringing the various different social civic movements under one umbrella, and with a real focus on climate change, because as I think I heard many people say that weekend, if we don't do something about saving the planet and our climate, and by extension food source, water source, all the rest of the issues won't be much, can't do much about it. So how successful were we in bringing people together, bringing movements, different movements under the same umbrella with the same goals, trying to coordinate together? Because I know there seemed to be a great deal of camaraderie on that weekend in May. But is that going forward? Is that working? Are people getting on board? Is there collaboration? Tell us.
The initial conference was actually beyond our wildest dreams. And the name of the conference, it's a really long name, was Building an Inclusive Climate Movement to Create Community Power.
Ah.
So that name is kind of all about what the conference was about. So we had basically one main goal, or two main goals. Number one, we wanted to take the climate change movement, or the global warming movement, which is a very segregated movement.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change is basically white. Climate justice is where the people of color are.
Yes.
And then when we thought about it, we realized the same thing in voting. Voter suppression, voter access, community
yes.
of color, election integrity, white. We also see it in healthcare, Medicaid expansion, communities of color, poor people, single payer, expanded Medicare for all,
yes.
white, upper middle class. And it's kind of that aha moment where we go, not only have we segregated our justice movement, or not only have we siloed our justice movement, we've segregated them as well, and we've done this to ourselves. So if anybody is going to stop it, then we have to say, okay, we stop. We're not going to do that anymore. And so we began talking to people who normally think about doing change, about expanding into climate justice,
mm-hmm.
expanding into en masse criminalization, expanding into the Equal Rights Amendment,
mm-hmm.
with the whole idea that, yes, climate change does have to be the primary fight, one planet, one people, but it's basically, we must save the planet, but then after we save it, we really do want justice and life to be worth living for all the people that are in it and on it. So that was kind of we had been working to do the conference, and about half place for this conference, it really occurred to us what was happening.
Yes.
And what is amazing is people started reaching out. Groups that had been perfectly comfortable doing their conferences and never bothering to reach out to the communities of color started contacting us and reaching out. How do we get in touch with these folks? We really want them to all come to our conference. What do? How can we give them a role? And then local groups getting together saying, well, you know, if we're going to be a climate justice movement, then I guess a climate change movement, then we've got to look at climate justice. We've got to go and find our Black Lives Matter people and talk to them about what they're trying to do. And we've got to really start looking at our community as exactly that. It's a community with many diverse people in terms of race, in terms of economics. And we really need to make sure we've created space for everyone. I mean, that's why we consider ourselves progressives and basically not the other folks who are saying, look, we're concerned about the 1%, the other 99%, you guys are on your own. And again, if we're going to have to be the 99%, then we have to stop splitting ourselves off into 10% over here, 5% over there, 20% over there, 18% over here, and we're going to have to come together as a 99%.
It's true, you know, I often write when people, conservatives, liberals, fighting one another, and I go, guys, the 99% includes all those people who are not in the 1%, and they're male, female, Latino, Black, white, gay, straight, you know, old, young, college students with student loans, and you bring up another point that I want to stress, because as so often, some of us, we don't grow up experiencing all of these things. And so I hear it in a conference or on the Hill when I'm with you. And I go, holy smoke, of course. You said the phrase, and it reminded me, I want us to go to it, and you tell us. Climate injustice. Now, climate change is happening to everybody. So what is climate injustice? Because that's a little, that's a slice of the pie we don't all experience. Tell us so we know what that means.
Well, the movement called itself the Climate Justice Movement.
Yes.
And what they deal with is when we look at a lot of these bad things that go on in our atmosphere, where do they build the nuclear power plants? Where do they build the incinerators? Where do they build these buildings that just belch out black, acrid smoke?
Yes.
Well, most of the time, they're not in the upper middle class white neighborhoods. They're actually in the poor black and brown neighborhoods, so that you have children born perfectly healthy, but growing up with asthma and some dying of asthma at a very, very, very early age because they have no clean air and they have no clean water.
And there it is. And I just wanted you to say that. I know it's because we don't think about it, sad to say, and I admit you don't think about it when you don't grow up in that situation. And at this Climate Justice Conference in early May, and I heard them say what you just said and heard you speak, and so many organizations represented so well, and Moral Mondays, you know, who thinks about Moral Mondays until you realize how immoral some people are treating other fellow human beings? And then suddenly you go, it's a whole different America, and we need to become aware of one another and come together, because the 99%, as you and I both said, includes all those who are not in the 1%. So
one of the things I'm going to do really, really quickly is I think all your listeners and everybody is going to remember Eric Garner and, you know, the whole I Can't Breathe.
Yes.
Eric Garner had asthma.
Yes.
What most people don't realize is Eric Garner had six children. Eric Garner's, all six of his children have
just that simple. What we breathe, what we drink, what we eat. And women not only not making equal income, but also being charged more for medical treatment, and people being denied the extension of Medicaid because either their General Assembly or their conservative governor won't do it. It just goes on and on. The discrimination, the injustice, the people who keep coming out on the short end of the stick look like you and me. Everyone needs to say that. They breathe like you and me. They want to love and grow up healthy and have a family and accomplish things just like you and me. They do. And yet, they're not given that, they're just not given that same starting point. Food desert.
Well,
I mean,
and,
we could go.
And you know, we've got a really important vote tomorrow where all these things can suddenly become so much worse. There's the revote on TAA, the Trade Adjustment Assistance, and that will be either today or tomorrow.
Yes. I was on the phone call Sunday night with Liz Warren and all the guests of her MoveOn.org guests. It was, as always, those are such incredibly informative.
Hey, that's the People Demanding Action call now.
Yeah. You know, I know I got the invitation from you. That's why I called. And then, but I knew you would be busy trying to get to the Smithsonian. You can't be in every place at once. Not even you, I guess. But tell, you know, I know I've learned so much from Andrea Miller. And one of the things is hashtags are forever. So hashtag one planet, one people is one way to find out what we are talking about. But what other links, websites, peopledemandingaction.org, you tell us.
Exactly. Peopledemandingaction.org. And then, of course, the hat is tvamerica.org. And then we have moved all of our TPE information, all future calls. We have a little nation builder site, and that's tpeldemand.nationbuilder.com. So you can go there, you can sign up, and then we'll make sure that if you're not getting the invitations to the each call, you can get them, and then we put them on that site first, even sometimes when we don't even know who the guests are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a long fight unless we stop Fast Track today or tomorrow by getting a no vote on that trade adjustment.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I know you need to run over to the Smithsonian and stop them from making scientific foolishness of the rule of the day. And I want to thank you so much,
Andrea.
Thank you so much,
Andrea
Miller.
You're Italian. Think Andrea Doria.
Andrea Doria. Okay, that'll do it for me. But anyway, love you dearly. So grateful to have you on Earth with the rest of us. And we wish you all the very best in everything you're doing today at Smithsonian, everything you're doing to save us from TAA and TPP, and, of course, people demanding action, pulling us all together, realizing the 99% is who we all are. Thank you so much, Andrea. Take care.
Thank you, Marcello. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Want to see a real scary movie with the emphasis on real? Check out Citizen 4. Edward Snowden wanted an honest reporter to help reveal top secret papers to the American public. Identifying himself only as Citizen 4, he contacted prize-winning documentarian Laura Poitras. She promptly packed up her cameras and flew off to Hong Kong with fellow journalist Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian. Citizen 4 is a surprising documentary focusing on Greenwald's now-famous hotel room
courtroom interview with Snowden. Surprising, because the viewer is ushered into a genuinely dangerous real-life thriller in real time, complete with ominously ringing telephones, mystery fire alarms, and the ongoing threat of discovery. Even more of a surprise is Snowden's apparent candidness and evident concern for his country, in particular, the rights and freedoms of all Americans. Not the super spy traitor many might expect, Snowden comes across as an ordinary little guy having a genuine crisis of conscience and courageously acting to protect us from a government intent on eroding our rights and privacy in the name of national security. Still, the camera never asks us to believe Snowden's words or actions. Poitras and Greenwald merely ask us to weigh what we see and decide for ourselves. And weigh it we must, because Citizen 4 is indeed scary stuff. Citizen 4, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Dawn to dusk, ashes to dust. 150 years after Appomattox, African-American churchgoers still under attack. One man's faith is another's carefully taught fear. Heads bowed or eyes uplifted, American transformation has always frightened the status quo. 1776, 1865, the 1960s, from Thomas Jefferson's inconsistencies to Ferguson, Baltimore, and now Charleston. Will we never rise up from decaying infrastructure to rejuvenate on the Golden Rule Bridge? 150 years after emancipation, descendants of enslaved people are still targeted on neighborhood streets and during Bible study in the first social institution fully controlled by black men in America, by armed descendants of slave owners carefully taught to cull cultural evolution. Political, religious, racial, and sexual transformation are violently shaking our reactionary M.O., poo-pooing Pope's holy universal view of humanity slogging through an immense pile of filth, having abandoned earth stewardship, thinking tithing our only charge, like Red Pollard, we're looking over our shoulder too late to win the race with the oceans. We drown in commercialized ignorance of dwindling drinking water, mistaking guns and money for oars. 150 years after Lee and Grant separately signed for peace together, it is for us, the great-grandchildren and our children's children, to keep trying to win the good fight against the tragic consequences of hate. But is it likely South Carolina lawmakers will at least make a symbolic gesture of respect to 6 women and 3 men slain in Charleston, now that secret Koch brothers party pal Justin Clarence Thomas has tagged Confederate flag license plates? Truth is, no matter our skin color, family background, no matter our education, dress, or address, no matter our uncast vote or filled-out ballot, no matter our sleep partner or orifice preference, no matter the aisle side with which we identify, gated community or walk-up, unless you're wallowing in luxurious corporatism bonuses, you are the 99%. We are the company we keep electing, so elect those who reject anyone being target practice for hate, murder, and bullies of every kind. Voting is the glue of love and hope needed to transform us in unity, and nonviolent protests are the only way to right our ship of state. 150 years after our first presidential assassination is too long for continually kicking the can down the road to children whose life expectancy is now declining in quantity and quality with each succeeding generation. Whether our weather comes from God, countrymen, or Martians, climate change is here and will continue changing us until we hop out of the simmering pot of denial. History-making facts. Bilderberg has given G7 membership notice to give producers of fossil fuels notice to monopolize renewables before the end of the 21st century. FDA orders food manufacturers to stop using trans fat in our food within the next 3 years. What's next? Pharmaceutical pushers of statin addiction taken off Viagra? 150 years after the Jefferson School opened in Charlottesville, Virginia, in October 1865, it remains a beacon for the half that has yet been told. More than a restoration of the past, the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center is a cultural renaissance, transforming our future quality of life and liberty with the pursuit of the whole herstory as well as history. 154 years after April 12, 1861 gun violence, I was the Spoleto Festival Rehearsal Department Director in the Low Country of Charleston. 150 years after the Civil War it started, Dylan Roof is not Charleston, but the families who forgive him are. Although evolution has always terrified some Americans, our national progress is in forward thinking together. Are we ready to transform out of the gun and flag conflicts into the brilliance of ensemble? We're not just whistling Dixie anymore. We're transforming into a multiracial symphony. Separate but equal medley isn't enough. We've got to learn to harmonize. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you, especially to our founding fathers and all our dads.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of The Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.